Hello and welcome to Building Minnesota Rocker. We've got a special edition episode for you guys here today. My name is Ashley, aka Midnight. I'm here today with Brett Dime, the CEO. We're down at WeWork. We're actually got our whole crew working behind us. Pretty cool vibe. Thank you again to WeWork for providing the space for us. Today's episode is special though because we are actually kind of listening to a panel / summit talk that you gave.
Yeah, so Sports Minneapolis and Meet Minneapolis hosted a panel here at WeWork yesterday. We're brought together a few different people that are active in the esports scene in Minneapolis and St. Paul. And that's something you'll see us do a little bit more in content over the next few weeks, is pulling in people from the local scene to talk about the work that they're doing. So there's a lot of good stuff happening here, and we're excited to be a part of it.
Awesome. Great. And I really like this episode because there's a lot of new nuggets and tidbits in there that we haven't discussed yet.
A couple new things.
Haven't gone too deep on some of them. So it was a really good listen for me. I really enjoyed it. You did a great job.
Thank you. Yeah, it's an audience that is very new to esports. So some of the stuff is very basic. It was people that were probably hearing things for the first time. So you'll get that vibe as you listen to it from everybody on the panel, that you're talking to a group that, good news is, they were interested in learning more and they were pretty into it.
Yeah. And I kind of think that speaks to us building the team as we go, right? Is making sure that the people are educated and they know kind of what we're building here and what's yep. new in Minneapolis. I really enjoyed listening, and I hope you guys do too.
My name is Melvin Tennant with Meet Minneapolis and Sports Minneapolis. And I have a very easy job today, and that is simply to introduce the panelists for our Esports 101 program. Obviously, by the interest that we've had, the great response, we thank you for that. A lot of people are wanting to get in the know in terms of how the esports industry has evolved and is evolving. So we'll be learning right along with you. Sports Minneapolis has invested resources and time and effort in trying to learn how we can best insert ourselves into this esports ecosystem. Do you like that, Andy? Esports ecosystem, is that kind of you can use that if you like. Okay, esports ecosystem. So simply, I wanted to welcome you on behalf of Sports Minneapolis and Meet Minneapolis, and to basically introduce the moderator of our panel. So I had a chance to meet Andy McNamara just a few minutes ago and learn that we're both native Texans. So, in fact, we've got family in some of the same cities. So, you know, maybe if we kind of do one of those ancestry DNA things, we might be like cousins or something. I'll just start calling you Cousin Andy. How about that? But Andy is editor-in-chief of Game Informer. And, you know, I was kind of curious about that. I thought this might be maybe as a publication that's been around for 3, 4 years, 5 years because of the esports industry. But he's been with the publication for 28 years. So imagine that. So he has seen a lot in terms of gaming, and I'm sure you're learning and trying to really make sense of it yourself. So we're excited to hear from you, Andy. So I'd like to introduce editor-in-chief of the magazine, Andy McNamara. Andy.
Hello, everybody. How you doing? I'm just going to turn this on before I screw this up. So today we have four great panelists. So we've got Brett Diamond, COO of Rocker Esports. Is it Rocker Esports? Yes.
Minnesota Rocker.
Minnesota Rocker. Yeah, it's Call of Duty team. It's super exciting, by the way. We have Mike Tubman, who's with Vice President in Partnerships for Wombo Sports. We have Caroline Wardell with the Timberwolves team. How you doing? Welcome. And then finally, we have Tyler Othen. Hopefully I'm saying that right. Othen. Sorry about that. Who is with Convention Sports and Leisure International. Welcome, everybody. Thanks, everybody, for coming out this morning. I think I want to start off with a quick thing I get a question a lot is, like, people are like, what are esports? What kind of defines esports? And I think one of the first things I always like to bring up is that they're just like regular sports. Like, the greatest esports, they enable you to, like, love a team, love the players. Great games enable you to see a play. And I think that's one of the things that's confusing. People are like, oh, there's so much going on here. But if you think back to when you first saw a football game, it would be very difficult to understand, right? You kind of learn that stuff over time. I still don't know what cricket, I don't know how it works. I don't know how rugby works, right? But there's still sports. And they still have fans, and they still have people that love them. And I think that's the important thing about esports for people to realize, is that there is a very rabid group of players out there that love these games because they see those exact same things you see in regular sports, right? Great players making great plays. And I think that's something important to understand about esports and like where they're going and why they have been growing the way they have. So I just want to get that kind of out there. And like, you know, examples, league, things like that. And I, one last thing is, if you want to understand like the kind of scope of games, League of Legends just had their championship in Paris, France. And you should Google their opening ceremony. It's insane. It has holograms. It is, I mean, it's it looks, I mean, any kind of like Justin Timberlake halftime show. I'm not kidding. Like Super Bowl level stuff. That's where esports have gone. And you should see it. It'll give you a little perspective on how it's grown and how crazy it's gotten. So let's start off kind of talking about this. Tyler, you have done a lot with creating space and things like that and do a lot of data as far as like looking at where esports are and how they've grown. So can you tell us a little bit about the growth of esports?
Yeah. So I'm from Convention Sports and Leisure International. So we're a 30-year-old firm in the convention and sports industry space. So we help cities with feasibility studies for convention centers, stadiums. Now we're in the esports space, this newest concept of an event facility, whether it's temporary or permanent. So we've been working with municipalities the last 2 years now. And 2 years ago, I think that was, you know, that was when some of the first cities were first thinking and conceptualizing what would an esports space look like. But there was really only the numbers back then in like 2017, we knew the numbers were maybe 120 live events that actually used Twitch, that they were actually produced on Twitch. So meaning 120 events that maybe had 500 or so attendees throughout the country. That grew to 2018 from 120 to about 250. So the growth is there. But this is kind of a finite number. It's still in its infancy, definitely. And in terms of the number of people who've actually been to an in-person event, you know, that's still somewhat low relative to the viewership, you know, compared to other sports like the NFL and NBA. So still a lot of growth to be had, and a lot of that is just kind of producing esports events and investing in venues. There's really not dedicated venues out there, and there's maybe not enough infrastructure and communities to do live esports events, and that's kind of what we're working with municipalities on, is how do you build a space and build a community to actually host regular esports programming and increase that number, you know, just like the meeting and convention industry. How do you get the number from the hundreds to the thousands of esports events going on around the country?
That's really great. So when we see, like, I mean, esports is been like growing, but I think one of the biggest changes that we've seen in the last couple of years has been that a lot of times it was like teams that were created on their own. And just as a reference, somebody knows, like, Twitch is like a streaming channel, like basically where you can watch like YouTube kind of thing, just so everyone's aware. But one of the things that's changed is that a lot of these teams were just like Optic Gaming. They didn't have a place. And that's changed. And that actually started with NBA 2K when they would associate to a city. And I think that's a big change. And also, too, with Brett, with the Rocker, which is, you know, the Minnesota Rocker is part of the franchise group to bring Call of Duty to different cities. So there's 12 teams with that. And so that's really changed the dynamic of bringing a city involved. And in particular, in Brett's case, that they're going to do location, that it's going to have home and away games. But we'll get to that in a moment. But I wanted to ask Caroline, so you guys kind of did the impossible last year, which I think is worth bringing up. So the Timberwolves, I mean, were kind of like classic Minnesota sports, by the way, like 9-9, kind of going into the playoffs. Let's see how this goes. And then they went on to win the championship. It was quite an amazing story. So congratulations, by the way, on that.
Thank you.
But can you tell us some about the experience with NBA 2K and kind of like having it associated with the city and what that's meant
for the T-Wolves? Yeah, absolutely. So I was actually not that different from any of you 2.5-3 years ago when we decided to take on this project. I grew up having my mom tell me to go outside rather than play video games. So when we decided, they said, you know, you're going to be working on this NBA 2K project. I'm wide-eyed, but I was in so many rooms like this trying to learn as much as I could. So now I'm here and really excited to be here. And I think anything like this just proves the excitement around it. So we were really excited to bring it to Minnesota and bring it to the city. Having it be associated with the Timberwolves is obviously very exciting. There's 22, now 23 teams in the NBA 2K League. And they're all associated with a team except for one, which just got brought on in the last couple months. But we knew there was a market and a place for this here. So the answer was very easy for us to come in for year two and really build a local fan base for ourselves, because we knew the following for NBA 2K was so great, especially in the Asian markets and all over the world, really. So bringing it here was very exciting, and building a practice facility and really establishing ourselves in the community and working with other esports teams, whether that be college or high school, was something we were really excited to do. So.
Yeah, it was, and I think it's worth noting, one of the cool things the NBA did, because they're associated with this one, is they did an actual draft, and they had the commissioner of the NBA there at the very, very beginning, and they NBA'd it up, and it was kind of crazy and cool to see that kind of level, and you know, and it would be like, I can't remember any of the names, but you know, it'd be like, internet guy's name would be like who got drafted, and it was kind of fun to see. So it was pretty exciting. So once again, congratulations on the big
Thank
win.
You.
That was huge.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. I have a question for Brett. Since you guys are doing, I think, innovating here. So Overwatch, I'd just like to give a little bit of thing. Overwatch and Call of Duty are the ones that are now associated with cities. And Overwatch started where they were doing all their matches in Burbank. So even though you were the Shanghai team or whatever, all your games were essentially played in LA. That changes this year for Overwatch, and with the introduction of the Call of Duty League, which they're going to have home and away games. And we actually have an event coming here to Minneapolis in January, which will bring all 12 teams of that league to this event. So tell me about, I mean, there's a lot of new logistical challenges and things like that that you need to deal with. And tell us about the Rocker,
which
is super exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Andy. So we announced the formation of the team over the summer. The Will family, who obviously owns the Vikings, is the primary owner of the Minnesota Rocker, which, as Andy said, is in the Call of Duty League. We rolled out our team branding a couple weeks ago. We're going to have it up somewhere in the back afterwards if people want to take a look. And at the same time, we announced that we were hosting the first ever event for the new league. So it's Call of Duty Launch Weekend, which will be here January 24th through 26th. And to be honest, it took a little bit of convincing to get the folks at Activision to bring their first ever event of their new league here in January. Truth be told, it was something that was very important to the Wilfs and to our ownership group when they were making the pitch to Activision to get the franchise slot in the new league. They included in there a plan to host that first event. And we worked very closely with Melvin and his team, Matt Meniere in the back, you know, great partners for, I think, all of us here in the community. So we worked together to put a competitive bid in front of Activision. And you know, we were thrilled that they agreed to bring that first event here. So what it'll be all 12 teams in the league coming here for 3 days of competition, and that will only happen a couple times during that season. A typical weekend event for this league will have half the teams in the league. So you know, it's something that we're incredibly excited to host. It'll be at the Armory, just a few blocks from here, and you know, we can talk more about the details as we go. But it should be pretty exciting and a great way to really, for us as a new team, a great way to put our organization on the map. And put this city on the map in hosting a major esports event for the first time.
So I think since we have a lot of people in the hotel business, where do the visiting teams stay? and like what kind of things does a team need? Like when you're going out, you're like, hey, I need to stay at this hotel. Like people need to practice ahead of time, right? Like what other things do players and the team need as far as accommodations to make something stand out for you guys as you travel?
Yeah, so you know, in some ways, it's not terribly dissimilar from traditional sports, right? You've got a team that's traveling to an event, and there are the same logistics that go with that. You're flying. You need hotels. You need transportation. You want to put the players in the best position and mindset to succeed. And I think that's true whether you're participating in Call of Duty or NBA 2K or the NFL or the NBA, right? You know, so as far as specific hotel needs, because I'm sure there are some people wondering, you know, we
many of you probably submitted some proposals to Activision as part of our process. I think we'll have some news to share soon on which direction they're going. But generally, you know, these events will use anywhere from, you know, 400 to 1,000 room nights, sometimes more, depending on the length and the number of teams. And that's really just for typically internal logistical needs. Generally, esports events haven't gone to great extents to secure fan housing as part of that, right? The fans are kind of on their own to book. I think as the whole industry evolves, those things will probably become more formalized, especially as bid processes and those sorts of things continue to evolve.
So, Mike, you approach things from a little bit of different angle, and I think have a different perspective here in that you bring athletes and celebrities to events around games and kind of like around the like excitement for games and gaming and esports, and also I think have some perspective on things that are outside of even just esports as far as larger gaming events. I don't know if anyone knows, but we've also had like Awesome Games Done Quick has been here most summers, which has gone really well. Big fan. It's really fun to watch, by the way, if you haven't ever done it. And could you tell us some about what you're doing in the space?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm kind of the old guard up here. I've been in the gaming and the esports industry for about the last 15 years, more on the brand side, but now shifting over to Wombo, where we do a lot of content and we work with influencers and, you know, kind of where gaming is today. And it's kind of, you know, over the last few years, really kind of come out of the shadows, and it's a lifestyle. It's not this, you know, kids in the basement, all the old tropes and things like that. But, you know, it just a lot, what we do at Wombo is we have, you know, more of the celebrity pop culture side, and, you know, everyone's a gamer. Everyone loves to game, you know, Brett, you know, with their guys, or even when you look at the traditional teams on, you know, the Vikings and the T-Wolves, what these guys do, you know, in their spare time when they're not practicing and playing and doing anything else is, you know, they're gaming with their friends because, you know, they're a bunch of, you know, 18 to 25 year old, you know, men that, you know, that's how they've grown up. And that's been part of their life. So, you know, we take, you know, those guys and we put them in different opportunities, you know, whether that's pro-ams have become a big thing, you know, similar to, you know, what you see in golf and other sports where in addition to watching the pro esports players play, whether it's in Call of Duty or any other title, you know, you're trying to drive that awareness to a much broader audience. You know, you don't just want to stick with the core audience. You want to be able to bring in other graphics, other people, and that association with something that's familiar to them, whether it's an athlete on the Vikings or, you know, their favorite music artists or, you know, a big DJ or things like that. You know, we associate them with these games, with these events, put them in opportunities where not only can they grow their awareness with the gaming audience, but the gaming audience is able to kind of broaden their scope and introduce their game, their players, their leagues to, you know, additional fans and grow from there. And then, you know, it's creating content around them, but it's, you know, it's kind of this collision, you know, of gaming and pop culture is kind of where we live. And then, you know, more broadly, I mean, esports is, you know, kind of the big buzzword and kind of what everyone associates it with. But, you know, that's kind of just the tip of the iceberg. You know, that's the top of the top, the, you know, the biggest, you know, players in any given game or league playing. But, you know, within esports, you've also got a great amateur scene. You've got a lot of great collegiate and high school leagues and teams popping up. And then, you know, it's the gaming industry more broadly. There's a lot of conventions. I mean, just like this, you know, tons of people going out to learn about esports or different aspects of things and how they can really get into the space. And, you know, I've met a variety of people, you know, in the audience today at other conferences around gaming and esports and others. And then, you know, like Andy mentioned, you know, Games Done Quick, other, you know, charity driven events. You know, it's not just the competitive scene that can drive people here. You know, it's a variety of things from conventions to charity to esports to just, you know, fun events. You know, we're putting on a pop-up in association with Best Buy through, you know, now through January, you know, partnering with the Mall of America. And that's just an opportunity to, you know, expose more people to gaming and to esports in a variety of ways. And, you know, that's half the battle is just kind of getting, you know, broadening the audience, getting people more familiar and more comfortable with it. And, you know, kind of getting, in a lot of cases, getting away from those old stigmas that this is, you know, not something that should be encouraged. You know, it's part of, you know, how a lot of people kind of just spend their time now.
Great, thank you. So, Tyler, you have a unique perspective in that getting a chance to build and work on the facilities where esports will happen. So we've had some interesting things happen in that in Philadelphia, they've opened, they're starting work on a new place, an arena. And so I should point out, like, there are places in like Korea and China that they have built giant arenas, like giant, but there's it's slowly happening here in the US. We have one in Vegas, we have Arlington, Texas. Can you tell us about some of these facilities that have been built and what opportunities there are there?
Yeah, it's really exciting. It's really, really early, this stage of developing real dedicated facilities for esports. So that meaning there's no consensus yet on what the right model looks like. It's like the industry is kind of throwing some things against the wall, just kind of see what sticks. And it's going to be interesting to see really what works. You know, it ranges from there's an esports arena in Irvine, California, and there's esports arenas showing up in universities around the country, including Western Michigan, Full Sail University in Florida. These are these venues for maybe under 500 people. They're kind of these glorified computer labs that are kind of mainly for the participants themselves with limited spectator space. And then you're talking about kind of a step up from that, the esports arena. It's a company owned by Allied Esports that has three arenas on the western part of the country, one in Oakland, one in Santa Ana, and then one over in Las Vegas. These are for, you know, 1,500 people, but they're kind of converted nightclub, converted warehouse spaces. It's kind of almost more social than an event space. And now you have the dedicated facility in Philadelphia, in addition to what they did in Arlington, Texas, and between the Dallas Cowboys Stadium and the current Texas Rangers ballpark. These are these massive venues for 2,500 people. And I should say the one in Arlington, that was their old convention center that they converted into an esports space. It was an underused convention center anyway, so they kind of thought, why don't we invest $10 million into this space, kind of prepare ourselves for the future, see what happens. From what I understand, they are doing, you know, okay business, maybe not quite meeting expectations because the industry is not where it needs to be now, but the move was kind of done for 5 years from now when there's going to be more of these in-person events, and they're themselves going to be self-programming and working on developing events. So it's still this kind of testing ground stage right now about what type of facility is really going to work. But it, you know, the investment is there, and I can tell you, talking with ESL and Collegiate Star League, all of these organizations that plan events, they've been looking for venues like this that are outfitted for them, that would be turnkey, so they don't have to move in a big satellite truck to a hotel ballroom or set up in a convention center for thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. They're looking for more ready-made technology for them to be able to host events. So it's an exciting space, definitely.
Yeah, it's gotten kind of crazy how quickly that has come to be. And there's also, too, I should point out that, like, we had an event at U.S. Bank when they were here for, that they did Apex Legends was part of that. So, I mean, like, they do, we're having these smaller kind of, like, made for esports arenas, but, I mean, some of the larger and bigger events that can come to your town. And by the way, I'd love for you guys to get something like that here in Minneapolis. Would be very cool as a local Minneapolis, you know, like I'm and fan. I would love to see more of those. But, you know, for Dota, which had a prize pool of $34 million, which is what the players were vying for this last year, that was in China at the Mercedes-Benz, like, giant thing. I mean, like, when they announced that it was going to be in China, they had the mayor of Shanghai did this like a crazy, like, you know, like when a city wins the NCAA bid and they do the, like, all right, Memphis, let me tell you all about it. They did that for, I mean, it's kind of gone to this kind of level in Asia that you have to see it and kind of watch how that's happening, because it's another thing, just kind of a little bit of a history lesson, is that Korea was a place that got great internet really early, and that saw esports rise and the ability for it to capture not just like players but like a nation. They would have like StarCraft like festivals as like a country, right? Like, this isn't like, this would be primetime TV watching, and that's not the way it is here yet, but I think that's important to understand as these guys talk about the change that's coming, that there, it has happened in other places and it has gotten that big, and there are those kind of opportunities, I think, for the cities to be involved and invest in esports.
And if I could speak for a minute to our, you know, to to our long-term plans. So we're building a training facility right now out in Viking Lakes in Eagan, where the Vikings have their practice facility. Long-term, we're exploring building an arena similar to what Tyler mentioned is being built in Philadelphia. We're in the process of evaluating it. Like Tyler said, there's a lot of considerations, and it's, you know, the model is evolving, right? And it's something where anyone that's considering building one of these, it can't just be about esports. It has to be about bringing a consistent flow of events like any event venue, right? And, you know, what's interesting is the considerations that you go through, it's similar to any, you know, any team or organization where, you know, for us, do we want to continue to year after year rent out space, whether it's at, you know, a venue like the Armory? Do we want to build our own arena? Can you make it financially viable? Those are all the things that you're looking at. And when you think about the size of it, so, you know, you have that Philly arena is, I believe, around 4,000 seats. You know, that might be the right size for now. You don't want to build a venue that's too big. But if you want your, if you expect the scene and the team to grow and the audience to grow over time, you also don't want to build a venue that you outgrow 5 years from now or even 10 years from now. You want it to be a venue, if you're going to invest that kind of money, you want it to be a venue that you can, that's sustainable for 15 years, 20 years, 30 years, like a stadium would be.
Well, I think that's interesting too, because I don't know if you guys have heard, but you might have an association with the Target Center in some way, shape, or form. I don't know. I'm just guessing there. I mean, just do those kind of things play a part in your decision to get involved in esports and where you're going? Could you tell us a little bit about that, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So right now, the NBA 2K League hosts all of their games in New York. So every week we fly out to New York to maybe for a day and a half, maybe two. And then their tournaments have traditionally been in New York, but they last year just took some on the road, one being to Las Vegas and then the other being to Orlando, Full Sail Arena. So, and those are all, the Vegas one is a little bigger, but 500 to 1,000 people. And so when we have looked to host events, we've tried to stay in that 500 range, which Target Center right now obviously is about 19, 20,000. But we have been able to kind of retrofit some of the spaces, whether it be like the clubs where you can fit 500 and bring staging in, Or and then obviously the hope is to fill something like Target Center, like they do for League of Legends at Staples Center. So it's definitely something that we've considered, and hopefully over time, like he said, 5 years from now, it would be a great opportunity to fill Target Center and a hope.
Yeah.
I'll add to that. You know, I think it's an example of where everybody on this stage and in the audience can work together, right? So let's say hypothetically we built that arena and we haven't decided to build it or not yet, but it won't be the size of Target Center or Excel. It'll be somewhere, you know, somewhere in the middle. So if we're going after a certain size profile event, we might be looking to host it at our arena. But if we're going after something big, we would look to work with the Wolves or the Wild to host it there. And we haven't said this publicly before, but we did actually look to see if either of those arenas was available for our launch weekend with Call of Duty. And unfortunately, both had events previously committed, but we think we could have, that the demand was there or will be there for this event to fill those up. So, you know, it's something that I think everybody in the room, and, you know, this is where, you know, the Meet Minneapolis, Sports Minneapolis leadership is key, and, you know, Matt and Melvin and their team is awesome, can really, you know, work with all of us to bring these events here.
So how has been, I mean, you don't have to reveal anything you're not supposed to or anything like that, but how have ticket sales been for the event here at the Armory?
They've been good. We're pretty excited about what we've seen so far. It's too early to really share numbers. What we've seen is the core esports community, I think, responded well. Our next phase is to really push an awareness message out beyond the people that are paying attention right now, right? Like we, you know, as a new team, and really, this would be true whether our first event was in January or later in the season. We've rolled out our brand. I think we've gotten some fairly positive traction, you know, in local media, in the Star Tribune, in the Business Journal. But the key thing for, you know, especially as a new team in a new league, is getting that message out to, you know, to people like many of the people in this room that they've heard of esports, they sort of know what it is. And getting that message in front of them. And really, we look at it similar to how to how we looked at things with the Vikings. And I was with the Vikings for 3 years before I transitioned into this role. You know, and Mike referenced, you know, kind of the, you know, fans that are attracted to the cultural aspects of esports. And if you look at fans that are at US Bank Stadium on a Sunday or, you know, at a Wild or a Wolves game any, you know, any day of the week, some are there because they're hardcore fans of the sport and they're focused on every second of action, every play, right? And then you have some people that are there because they're along for their ride with their husband or their wife or their boyfriend or their girlfriend, but they're there because it's fun and it's a cool environment. Then you have people that are there with their friends that are gonna have a good time, knock back a few drinks. Like, so there's a whole range of people that are motivated to come to any sporting event for whatever their reason is. And that's the way we look at it as we think about how we, you know, how we kind of attack growing our organization and growing the fan base. And filling up the armory in January.
Yeah, I think it's also interesting too that it's one of those things that's kind of crazy when you look at the numbers about viewership, particularly with esports, is that some of these events, this isn't a 3-hour game, by the way. This is a 12 to 14 hour marathon that the players go through. I think, how long will the events be at the armory? I think, because you've got five matches a day?
Yep. Yeah. So it's about five matches per day. Each match will be, you know, probably somewhere in the hour and a half range. So on their own, they're shorter than a traditional sports event, but because they're all taking place in the same location. So let's say you're a fan watching at home, and you're tuning into a Saturday or Sunday of the Call of Duty League. Your viewing experience wouldn't be significantly different than an NFL fan sitting on their couch on a Sunday watching, you know, match after, you know, game after game. The difference is they're all taking place in the same venue. So if you're buying a ticket to the event, you're coming for, you know, for an entire day's worth of events and entertainment, essentially.
And they do something very cool in the game space that's different than traditional sports in that, people go and play the game afterwards, you know what I mean? Like you watch professional players to be like, wow, I can do that, which you probably can't. But you know, you're like, you live that dream. But one of the things that they do is there's a lot of cosmetics in these games, and there's a lot of cosmetics that they can make part of the events and part of the experience. So like if you watch something on Twitch, you can get things that you can use in game. Actually, NBA this year has an interesting thing. They have a deal with Nike where you can unlock shoes. This is only in the single player, but you can unlock shoes that you can buy through the Nike sneakers app only by doing things in the NBA game. So that's the kind of example of engagement that esports has that is just, by the way, as I talk about, everything here is at the beginning, I think, of what we can do and what the game space can do. But in some cases, like for Overwatch, if you watch an Overwatch game and you're in the middle of, they do these drops in the middle where you can get items that you can use once again to customize your game. I'm sure Call of Duty is going to do that. Once again, not looking for secret information, but you know, it's just kind of standard practice, which engages a lot of people and gets them excited. And then you can do things like Fortnite did. They had a big event in New York this year with, once again, a prize pool over $30 million that they had like almost a festival outside. They had tons of things to interact. I mean, people came who didn't know how to play Fortnite and brought their kids and had a great time because they really put together. I mean, these are festivals to some degree. You know what I mean? More than just like watching the event, I think to Brett's point about that it's more than the people that just love to watch every single thing that happens.
I was just going to add to that from our perspective. If you have a moment, my piece of homework for you would be to go home and Google what an NBA 2K game looks like on YouTube, because it really truly is a festival. I think when the league started up, heading into season 3 this year, they weren't expecting the amount of it's chaos in there. It's a studio in New York, and so, you know, it's a circular stage so that players face each other, and what you would get more from a traditional basketball game is the amount of trash talking that goes on. So they're constantly standing up, screaming at each other. And while they all monitored and there's no swearing or anything like that, it's absolute chaos. It's kind of funny and it's really, really entertaining. So it makes, because it is really a marathon, not a sprint, the whole day lasts about 6 hours for games and everything. They really, it's very entertaining and it keeps the viewership up, other than the lights and the cameras and the music and events are that are going on in between games, but it's a very entertaining thing to watch. So if you ever get a chance, I would recommend.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
Just basic level of education, go Google something like that.
Yeah, and it's also too, there's a lot of discussion like on in the space, because a lot of things like scrims are like teams, which is weird. They'll show you practice, right? Not always. It's once the like season starts off, but once teams are formed, they'll go online and you can go watch your favorite team practice, which is kind of cool once again. And then there will be a lot of tournaments that do happen online or kind of like more grassroots that aren't a part of official leagues that are always going on, so you can learn about players. And then when they do make it to the big time, go pro, get in a larger league, that there's a lot of buildup and follow through. And there's also a lot of buildup to the final event. Like I said, for League and Dota, there's not as many, a lot of games are played just online. And then when the opportunity finally comes to see your heroes in person, right? That I think that plays a lot into what goes on.
And to that point of about being able to watch the players essentially practice, scrimming is what they call it. You know, our players are functionally in the period where it's kind of like open training camp, right? They're scrimming against other teams. You can go on Twitch and watch. You can watch any of the players' streams, and you can hear the other players commenting as well. I mean, it's really, for a fan, it's almost like being on the sidelines at Vikings training camp. It's that you're that immersed in what the players are doing. And now, eventually, when it gets close to the competition, traditional sports teams do, kind of shut off that access. But there really is. I mean, it's an amazing. The fans of esports teams have a natural ability to get so much closer to these athletes than in traditional sports, and not just the ability, but the expectation too. And that's something that as a team in this space, we need to make sure that we're delivering on that expectation for fans.
Oh, 100%. Tyler, like, do we have any idea on what kind of dollars we're talking about as an industry that esports is generating? Do you have any of that data that you could share with us?
I mean, right now it's being tracked by Newzoo. They're kind of the esports research experts. It's growing from, you know, a $500 million industry to over a billion, you know, $1.2, $1.3 billion by the end of this year over the last 3 years. Now, what exactly does that mean? It's pretty much the professional scene, the professional competitive scene. So talking about the sponsorships that are going into sponsoring teams, sponsoring players, sponsoring events. It's the private sector wanting to get in front and have name recognition for these events. What I will say, what's not being tracked is the amateur scene and kind of what we've been talking about today. You know, I think there's a lot of opportunity to build communities around the country, get your local gamers, you know, like I would love to participate in a Super Smash Brothers tournament. I can. I actually did one in Oakland and I got booted in the first round inside of 2 minutes or something. It was some record short time. But I want an opportunity to play with people who are more on my level, definitely. And I think that's certainly an opportunity, and that's not being tracked because, you know, the infrastructure is not there. And there's just not enough communication between some of these tournament organizers who maybe plan things locally and regionally. So I'd say the $1 billion, whatever that means, it's kind of, I don't think it tells the full story, so.
Or represents the investment in esports that's going on right now.
Right.
That is quite big. And also too, I cannot remember the name. There's a number of companies going after creating the leagues in high schools and at the college level. That's definitely something that is growing.
That's probably the biggest opportunity we're seeing. Like, we're doing a project. Well, we have two studies going on in San Antonio and South Bend, Indiana, and basically these facilities that they're developing. You know, a lot of the programming. Sure, maybe they'll get an ESL, maybe they'll get an exhibition match from an Overwatch or Call of Duty League, you know, once a year. But the big thing is going to be the high school and collegiate scene. The Midwest has a lot of esports colleges, college programs that are looking for tournaments. They want to go somewhere. They want to play an in-person championship. And we're seeing that opportunity definitely in South Bend to host like a conference championship, a national championship for different titles, for collegiate Overwatch or collegiate League of Legends.
Yeah, for sure. So I want to get a chance to have you ask questions. So we'll open it up to Q&A. Wow, that happened. It's early in the morning. Q&A this morning. So if anybody has any questions, we'll try to see if we can just do it through the shouting. If not, we can get a microphone out to you.
So I know you were just talking about the high school and the collegiate scene. I know an important part of any sports or league is to concentrate on the growth and cultivation of new players, new stakeholders. So are there any general strategies or trends going on in the youth scene, particularly like the grade school or middle school age levels?
That's a good question. That's definitely a young age. What I do know is where there's some high school curriculum based around esports programming. You know, that's been a strategy, both middle school and high school. In San Antonio, for instance, in the Texas area, there's several high schools that are developing game programming. And as a part of that, when you enroll in the game programming class, you're automatically on the esports team. And then, so it combines athletics with STEM education. And that's a big opportunity. But also, I mean, to raise interest and get more people in the program, I mean, it's all about just listening to the kids and the players. I mean, obviously, we're coming from a place where maybe we're a bit older. We don't know which games are most popular with them. I mean, doing a vote in your school district about, you know, which types of leagues and titles should we compete in, you know, focus groups and surveys with the community about should we have a Fortnite team, should we have a Super Smash Brothers team, should we have all the above? That kind of outreach is really, really big.
Also, it might be interesting for Caroline or Brett. Like, I mean, how do you find the next pros? Like, what do you have a scouting team? Sends out the jet, picks them up, brings them in.
You know, he talked about fans earlier. So there's the fans that are obviously very engaged, NBA fans, and then there's NBA 2K fans, and then there's the overlap of what an NBA fan is and what a 2K fan is or general esports, but. Like you said, growth is very important, so we're trying to capture them coming up as well. So we've hosted, if you're familiar with our space, we're over the Mayo Clinic Square building, and on our second Skyway level, we have our esports practice facility for the 2K team, and we've hosted just recently something with the U of M and other, we look to host with other high school teams to not only grow our local fan base, but also make sure that we're nurturing that fan base coming up. Other things that we've done, a ton of community events. The guys, our six players, understand that they are building this from the ground up, so they're very accessible, wanting to get into the community and work with young players. And we've also then looked to, because you'd be surprised that when you have a basketball clinic, there's actually a space for an NBA 2K or esports clinic. So we've hosted things like that and look to host more of them because the kids coming up are very interested, and we have a bright green space downstairs, so they're always very interested to get a tour and learn from the gamers. So that's how we've been doing it.
And, you know, I'll answer it in two ways. Zandy, you kind of asked two separate questions. You look at it from, I think, similar to any traditional sports team, you look at the fan development separately from the player development, right? You know, I was actually very impressed when we started to learn more about the esports scene locally, what is already happening at the high school and the college level. And we've had some good discussions with some of the people active in that scene about, you know, once we have our training facility open in Eagan, having high school teams come and do their practices there, having smaller amateur events there, it would be, events for, we'll have a common area probably about the size of this room that we could host events in. But I think for any team in any sport, any esport, connecting with young fans and the next generation of fans is just a critical part of it, and even more critical given the younger audience that we're talking about here. From a player development standpoint, since you asked that question too, we're not necessarily expecting to find, the next professional player at, St. Louis Park High School, right? If we do, great, right? Like every team wants their Adam Thielen. We have seven players on the roster now, and one of them, his gamer name is Tiny. He is from Minnesota, and this kid's got a great personality. Like he could really be a star. But the other six players all were part of the previous professional league in Call of Duty, the Call of Duty World League. We actually had somebody that was local to Minnesota. Ashley Glassell is her name. Her gamer name is Midnight. If she's here in the back, somebody send her up, but I don't think she is. So she had a long history with Optic Gaming, which is one of the iconic brands in the Call of Duty scene in esports. She was from Minnesota, had just moved back here around the time that we announced our formation, and it was just very, you know, just an incredible, you know, incredible timing for us that someone with her experience, you know, 10 years as a hardcore member of the Call of Duty scene, was here in Minnesota. And just to give you a perspective, so Ashley has 244,000 Twitter followers. When we were working out of the Vikings offices when we first started out, when she was in the building, the only person in that building with more Twitter followers was Kirk Cousins. She had more than Adam Thielen, more than Stephon Diggs, like you name it. So to your question of how do you put the roster together, so Ashley, with her years of experience in the Call of Duty scene, knew most of the players personally, knew all of the players very well and what their skill sets were. So she actually put together our first player board and handled our initial player outreach, was effectively our interim GM during that player acquisition process. And now she's transitioned into a role where she is now our content director and is leading those efforts for us, because that's where we actually said to her, like, do you want to be the GM? Is that something you're interested in long term? Because she has that skill set and those qualifications. Her preference was the content side, which was her passion for a long time. But you know, she's been an incredible asset to our team. And to your question of how do you put the team together, that's how we put our team together.
That's awesome. Yes.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Hi, thanks for coming in, everyone. My name's Jason. I'm a local guy. I fly drones, racing drones. And some of the things that are on my mind is that with talk of esports, how, you know, in drone racing, we can create these extremely high fidelity environments to simulate drones through an esports thing that actually translates to the real thing, like one-to-one. And then also on the youth league things that we've got, a youth high school league going that is tons of STEM learning around like 3D printing and things like that. So a lot of crossover. But the thing on my mind is, as I hear about gatherings and creating facilities and bringing people together, creating fans, I'm pretty sensitive to the idea that from a public health view, we have a lot of like isolation happening in the world. And to have a new emerging community form around these things is really exciting. And so I'm kind of curious from your perspectives, what goes into creating a really phenomenal event that people want to be at that's in service to the gathering itself?
I'll go first since I've got the microphone. I sort of referenced it earlier of the mindset we're taking is, you know, regardless of why somebody might want to come to one of these events, right? Are they a hardcore gamer? Are they really into the action itself? Are they there for kind of the hoopla around or their cultural aspects? You know, we want to find a way, whatever their motivation for being there, we want to create a great experience around that, right? So, you know, you have somebody that sits in a seat at US Bank Stadium on Sunday and just focuses on what's happening in the field and doesn't care what's going on the boards. You have somebody that could be the opposite, right? And so that's, you know, that's the mindset we take. But at the end of the day, you know, we believe that if we create great events here, whether it's for our team or other esports events to come in the future, you know, it sounds really corny to say if you build it, they will come, right? But, you know, that's sort of the outlook. Like, if you build it and you do a good job telling people about it and telling people that it's here, you know, we think that, to me, there's no question that the fan base is real, the passion is real, the excitement is real. It's about connecting with them in the right way to bring those fans in and then deliver on that promise of a great experience.
Yeah, I would throw in too, like, just because this is about esports, we should talk about some of the larger events that happen. BlizzCon happens in Anaheim every year. It has, literally a sea of people that are cosplay up as like all their favorite characters from this. There's all these communities that have grown out of that. They do, it's 3 days long. They have a culmination of fan parties, game reveals, and also actually have the championships for a number of their games all happen at the same time. And it's just a giant, huge event. They even sell virtual tickets as well so that everyone can be involved. It's a huge event. PAX is another one that goes also in Boston and in Seattle. They do one in Australia. It's grown, which are just large gatherings of gamers that come together that get to play various different games, not always around esports, but I think to point out that gamers are more social than ever. I mean, there is definitely that kind of, like, we could discuss social media and what effect that has as far as, like, looking at our phones and looking at computers all the time, but there are communities built there around all these games, and that's really how esports started, to tell you the truth. These people were like, I love playing this game, you love playing this game, how do we compete? And I think another bit of like, hey, I got homework for you. Netflix has a thing about for 10 years of League of Legends. It's about an hour and a half documentary about that, the rise of League. If you're really interested in like watching a sport and have something that's pretty easy to digest, and I'm guessing most everybody has Netflix, it's really good. It's worth checking out. And it'll teach you a lot about what's going on in esports and like the communities and things that are built around it.
Hey, Andy, if I could, I'll do one shameless plug for the group here. So our organization has a podcast where we're talking about on a weekly basis what we're doing to build the organization and what goes into it, whether it's branding or having the players on. We had our coach and our analyst on. So if anybody is interested in hearing those stories, it's on all the podcast channels. It's Building Minnesota Rocker. We post a lot of the clips from that on LinkedIn as well. So, you know, it's something where if you're interested in that behind the scenes view of it, would love for you to check it out.
Excellent.
That's my shameless plug.
No, it's all right.
And buy tickets for January.
I have one question about demographics. What is the fan demographic for just the esports? Is it, I would think it'd be like 14 to 25 or something like that.
I don't know if anyone hears. I don't know if I have exactly on esports. I mean, for gaming has gone all along the whole spectrum. As a matter of fact, one of the biggest segments is actually in the closer to 35 as far as like players go. I think that's shown the growth of like where games have gone. But I'm not exactly sure that I have any data myself. Yeah. Do you?
I'll answer for. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I will say it's older than you would think. It's definitely, I mean, males, it's typically male, but I mean, there's certainly a lot of female interest too, but it's 25 and up. You know, males are the ones who would go to the events and they're the big super esports fans. But I will say, I mean, preparing for the future, maybe the demographic right now for these event productions isn't, they're not the teenagers right now, but these teenagers, their number one, especially boys, I mean, the number one thing they watch is Twitch or YouTube gaming. So they're growing up on this concept of events around video games. So when they enter their 20s and they actually have income, that'll be the key demographic then in 5 to 10 years, certainly.
For the Call of Duty League specifically, the average age of a fan is 26. So Call of Duty as a game skews a little bit older. It's been around for a long time. It's the best-selling video game franchise in history. So there's a lot of people that are, you know, closer to my age that play it, as well as the younger demographic. So at 26, it's interesting because you're at about half of the average age of a traditional sports league, but a little bit older than the rest of the esports community.
Hi, my name is Jennifer with the Science Museum. And so my question is what is needed for a tournament? So we have an auditorium that has 6 to 50, we have an auditorium that seats 270. Does everybody have to be in the same room? I know you said that with that particular game, but is there a way to have a tournament where people are in different rooms?
Yeah. I'll let others talk as well, but I think you have a variety of ways of things. I mean, things can, you know, players can be playing online and digitally, and they don't even have to be in the same space, and that could just be a viewing experience where people come in and watch any given tournament. I'd say the biggest thing is just infrastructure. When you look at, you know, the players, whether it's kind of like a 5v5 and you need 10 people on PCs or consoles or whatever else, and you need to have no latency and just kind of high-end internet to support that, in addition to, you know, broadcast facilities to stream it out to Twitch or other things. When you look at kind of the, you know, the mid-tier to the higher end, that's what you're going to need. If it's more of just kind of a local tournament where, you know, you've got your, you know, you're like, we have a good local Smash scene here where a lot of people just kind of get together at whether it's a sports bar or wherever else, and, you know, they just want to play and people want to watch and they kind of crowd around and it works like that. So I think wherever you have kind of, you know, pieces of that infrastructure, I think you can kind of play in different ways. But, you know, if you're looking kind of for that mid-tier to higher end, you know, then, you know, you kind of need to look at your back-end infrastructure to see if that can support it, or, you know, can you, you know, kind of, you know, kick that up a notch for specific days and events like that.
One more question. You got your hand up. Let's do it.
So my name is Max Fisker. I'm a school champion. So I'm going to refrain from grilling Carolyn. My question is actually for Brett. So earlier you were talking about events and how to build great events. And considering you guys are hosting one of the most important, if not the most important esports event that's happened in Minnesota in just a couple of months here, I wanted to ask you a question about monetization, because obviously that's a huge concept in esports right now. So my question is kind of twofold. Like, in terms of that event, how do you view monetization, both in terms of like traditional revenue structures like ticket sales, but also like partnerships and activating things like that? How are you thinking?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, at its foundation, and just to use some analogies that are probably familiar to people in the room, you know, a lot of the basic revenue streams and monetization opportunities are similar to traditional sports, right? You have ticket sales, you have merchandise, sponsorships, you know, and I would say this is not dissimilar from traditional sports, but, you know, the big monetization opportunity and where the growth in the industry will be long-term, or at least we hope will be long-term, is in media rights, right? And, you know, for our league, that's controlled at the league level. You know, Activision Blizzard is our game publisher. You know, they're right now, you know, working on, they haven't announced yet who the broadcast partners will be for Call of Duty League for this year. You know, but it's all those things, right? It's, you know, for ticket sales, we're in a smaller venue than US Bank Stadium or than Target Center. Or Excel. So, you know, our model is going to look different than if you're in a bigger venue. And our model would have looked different if we were in one of those venues for our event. You know, but either way, all of those revenue streams play a key role in an event like this.
Thank you so much for listening to Building Minnesota Rocker. Hope you enjoyed the episode. Thank you again to WeWork for providing the space for us. And yeah, make sure to check out the links down in the description below. You can either watch this podcast on YouTube, you can listen on iTunes, Spotify, or any of the links you see down in the description below. Find your favorite way to listen. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.